Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, October 7th, 2017. This is episode 1428. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you in more ways than one by Blue Bottle Coffee. Get fresh, high-quality, delicious coffee delivered right to your door. Visit bluebottlecoffee.com/techguy for your free trial of Blue Bottle Coffee. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. And by Fracture. Fracture is a photo decor company that prints your photos directly onto glass. Then they get delivered to you, ready to display right out of the box. Visit fracture.me and use the code TECH15 at checkout to get 15% off your first order. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk tech, computers, and the internet, and home theater, and digital photography. We got smartphones to talk about, lots of them smart. Watches, maybe one fewer. Augmented reality, virtual reality. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. That's the number to call if you have a question or a comment, a suggestion, a recommendation. If you just want to talk high tech, 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Or Canada. Outside that area, you can still call. We get calls from all over the world thanks to the amazing internet. But, you know, you'd have to use a VoIP product like Skype out or something like that to call. 888-827-5536. You need to be able to call a phone number. I guess you can now with both the Amazon Echo and the Google Home. Both will allow you to call phone numbers. These are the competing, head-to-head competing devices that you talk to in your house. You don't have them in Australia yet, though, do you? You do. You have the Echo.
No, the other one.
Do you have the Google Home? Okay. That's one of the issues, is that these things are kind of dribbling out around globally. Amazon doesn't really have a big international reach. That's going to hold them back. Right now, I think Amazon's the clear winner. They had a two-year lead on Google and so forth. But boy, after the Google event, Google had a big product launch. They announced 8 or 9 new products on Wednesday. I'm starting to think Google is going to start to – Google's like the horse in the race, the sandbagger, you know, who Amazon took that early lead, but Google's just going to keep on going, keep on. I think I can. It's slowly going to gain. And I think if the race is long enough, and it is, right, so it's going to be a few years, Google's going to start to catch up here because they have an advantage over Amazon. Now, I like Amazon. I use the Amazon everywhere. I have Echoes all over the house, and I like that because I shop with Amazon, right? So it makes it easy for me to shop. I have Amazon Music and Spotify, and Amazon supports the music that I listen to, so it's really easy. Also this week on Wednesday, Sonos, which is that, you know, I know a lot of you probably don't use Sonos. It's kind of a specialty item, but I love it. It's these wireless speakers you could put throughout your house. They let you listen to internet radio or internet music. Or your own music. And the problem was that Sonos was starting to fall behind because, yeah, these speakers are great, but you had to pull out your phone and open the Sonos app to get them to play anything. Well, Sonos announced that they're going to start working with Amazon Echo. In fact, they are right now. If you have a Sonos, I was able to turn it on. And, man, that makes a big difference to be able to say, well, I say Echo is my trigger word, but whatever your trigger word is. Echo, listen to Led Zeppelin on the living room Sonos, it starts playing on the living room Sonos. You don't have to buy a new Sonos speaker. You just have to have an Amazon Dot connected to any one of them. And it all works somehow magically. I don't know how it does, but it does. Sonos says, we don't want to play favorites, so we're going to work eventually. We'll also work with Google's home device and Apple Siri, and maybe even someday with Microsoft's Cortana. Those are the big four players right now, right? Samsung has a voice, but I don't know. We'll see. I don't know if Samsung. They're making Samsung devices like kind of like Echoes, so I guess we have to count them in. I just feel like Google, because it knows so much about us, if you let it, if you use Gmail, their Google Mail product, and you do a lot of Google searching, you maybe use the Google Chrome browser. I do all three, and that means Google knows everything I do on the internet. It knows about. Which, yes, it's an invasion of privacy, I guess. I let them know it, so it's, I mean, I'm giving them permission. I'm using all those products. I'm not too worried about what they're going to do with it, except, you know, maybe they'll make ads be something I'm interested in. I don't think that's such a bad thing. And, boy, you sure get some benefits because, you know, Google can let you know you've got an appointment, get going. I see the traffic. It knows so much, right? So I think in the long run, they're going to have an advantage in this one. Amazon's leading right now, but in the long, it's going to be it's a good battle. It's a good battle. And Apple's in this too. Apple has a little bit of a disadvantage because they say, oh, we don't want to know anything about you. That makes it a little hard because, frankly, this stuff gets better the more they know about you. Google announced two new phones, the Pixel 2 and the Pixel 2 XL. Google announced they're finally doing a follow-up to their wildly expensive, but I think very nice, Chromebook Pixels. They're going to do the Pixel Book. Yes, still starts at $1,000, which for a Chrome OS laptop's a lot, but Google's calling them laptops now. They're really, because they've added the Android store, they've got Pen, they've got Touch. They say, well, you know, this is pretty close to a laptop now. $1,000 is a lot even for a laptop, but there are people who will buy. I bought one, but, you know, I'm not a good test for this stuff because I have to buy everything, don't I? So I can tell you about it. They also announced new Google Home devices. They have a little donut size. It actually really looks like a donut. The pink one does. Little donut-sized Google Home, which is a competitor, direct competitor to Amazon's Dot. Does exactly the same things, except maybe has a little bit better speaker in it than the Amazon Dot. They have a new big speaker, the Google Home Max. So they have the Google Home Mini. I guess the original one is, are you going to call it the MIDI? I guess you have to. And then the Google Home Max, which is a four-speaker, two tweeters, two mid-range / subwoofer. Supposedly sounds good. We'll find out when it comes out in December. $400 speaker aimed right at Apple's HomePod, which is $50 less. And, you know, to some degree at Sonos. These speakers, Apple's and the new Google speaker, supposedly, again, we haven't seen anything, so we won't. I'll just have to take their word for it, tunes itself depending on where in the room you put it. It listens and goes, I better boost the bass here, or I better tune up the treble here, or whatever. I don't know. You know, those things are the kinds of things companies say, and then when you get it, it's like, well, okay, if you say so. They also announced something very strange. They did not, by the way, and this is the watch piece, they did not mention Android Wear watches. Google's been trying to compete with the Apple Watch with the Android Wear watches. And in fact, Android Wear has been removed from the Google store. I think that it's over for Android Wear watches. I think Apple has won the watch war. Apple says, in fact, we're the number one selling watch, beating even Rolex in dollar volume. That's saying a lot. So the watch is gone, but they've introduced, I almost feel like this is a joke. They call it Google Clips or Clip. It's a camera that just is a camera. That's all it is. It has 16 gigs of memory. It has a clip on the back. It stands on its own. It's a little square. It's a little square thing. It looks like a, you know, a little candy, the kind of like a pillow mint candy square. About that size. It'll stand on its own or you can clip it to things. And the idea, Google says, is you just put it on something and you say go and then have fun with your family or your pets or whatever. And it has, they say, again, we haven't seen it, artificial intelligence built in, and it knows when to take pictures. And it takes pictures of the fun. And then at the end of the fun, whatever that may be. At the end of it, you go, you get the clip, you open your Google Pixel phone, And then you look at all the pictures it took and you say, oh, that's a good one, that's a good one, and you save them. It says we don't upload to the internet until you put it on your phone. Good. It just saves it locally. It's got 16 gigs of storage, a lot of storage. I don't know exactly what they're – but I don't know. Is this a – this is one of those products that no one's asking for, but maybe everybody will go, wow, this is the best thing ever. It's a little pricey, $250. Google had a busy day. I think the busiest day they've ever had. We could talk about that or any new products, your new iPhone, the iPhone 10. We're not going to be able to order it for another 20 days. Apple Watches, Android Wear, anything you want to talk about, 8888-ASK-LEO. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I expect you want to do this for sponsorship as soon as possible.
Say again?
For sponsorship as possible.
Yes, because I want some coffee. So I should probably do it right now. Shouldn't I? I should talk about Blue Bottle right now because I want some coffee. And John's going to make me some Blue Bottle. Look, my Blue Bottle came in the mail. John's going to grind it. So let me open it and I'll talk a little bit about what Blue Bottle is. It's the Blue Bottle is the coffee of San Francisco. And you know how San Franciscans feel about coffee. So this is one of my first Blue Bottle shipment that I've got. I'm very excited. This is a single source, roasted October 3rd. So that's what they do. They roast it right when you make the order, and then that way it's fresh. See, it has this little dot here. That means it's letting the bad gases out, but not letting the, you know, the CO, carbon dioxide goes out there, but no oxygen goes in. So I'm going to open it up. You want fresh beans. Let me just smell this here. Okay, so John's going to grind some. We're going to have some Blue Bottle. Everybody want some? This is Guatemala Huehuetenango La Esperanza. If you're deliciousness, candied kumquat, hazelnut, Swiss chocolate. Doesn't have any of those flavors. It's just coffee, but it's not flavored coffee. It's just really good coffee. Blue Bottle gets the best coffee. Sometimes it's a blend like their Giant Steps, which I love. Sometimes it's a single source. If you're this is what it says. If you're familiar with the coffees of La Esperanza, taking a sip of Huehuetenango is like putting your glasses back on after a thorough polish. Everything comes into focus. That's why I want some right now. At its freshest, this crystal clear combination of Caturra and bourbon is all the proof we need that cultivating relationships with agricultural innovators like Otto Herrera and his son Octavio means we anticipate their harvest, every harvest, like a child dreaming of December. Like all farmers, the coffee growers of Finca La Esperanza concern themselves with the soil without losing sight of the earth. Blue Bottle has an insane dedication to coffee. They take freshness very seriously. They work with farmers all over the world to secure the most delicious. And I have to say, I'm a Blue Bottle fanatic, and I have been for years. The most delicious and sustainable coffee they can find. 85% of their coffee certified organic. Most of their blends certified organic. Their beans are roasted within 48 hours of your order, shipped right to your door. Look, here we go. We're going to... Ow, that's hot. Because it should be hot. It's 200 degrees, right? We're going to make some Blue Bottle. So here, John has ground up my Guatemala Huehuetenango. Look at that. Oh, that's pretty, John. We're going to put two big scoops into our AeroPress. You know, the AeroPress is a great way to make a good coffee like this because it brings out all the flavor. Now, you let it get wet a little bit, and you let that soak in there. Blue Bottle has something for everyone's palate, from the lighter fruit-flavored profiles like this one to deep chocolatey espressos. They also offer their nightlight decaf. But why would you do that? Now we wait 10 seconds for this Huehuetenango to fully bloom. This is how you do it, right, John?
Yeah.
John doesn't drink coffee, but I'm going to convert him. Sign up for a free trial of delicious, fresh Blue Bottle coffee right now. BlueBottleCoffee.com/tech guy. Your free trial will then become a 12-ounce shipment of your selected subscription with bi-weekly delivery, so it's always fresh. You can change, pause, or cancel the subscription at any time. Sign up for the free trial. You can also claim $10 towards your first order. What do you got to lose? BlueBottleCoffee.com/tech guy. We thank Blue Bottle for their support and for this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Who's here? My goodness. It's the lovely and talented Kim Schaffer, who's right now very jealous of this fabulous coffee I'm about to.
It looks delicious.
I know. You should come in here and smell it. Oh, my goodness.
I will.
Our podcast has a, I won't say the name, but it has a coffee sponsor. And, oh, man. That's what I've dreamed of my whole life.
I walk past that place in the Ferry Building all the time.
Yes, they're in the Ferry Building, yep. In San Francisco. Yep. All I need is a pizza sponsor, and I can die happy. I'll have everything I ever wanted. So you've been lining up phone calls while I've been making coffee.
I have.
Yes. Do you have somebody I should talk to?
I think we're going to start out the morning with the blue screen of death. And
that doesn't even exist anymore.
Diane in Chicago got
Diane. You can't get that. That's there's no. Thank you, Kim Schaffer. We need to do some a rescue, an intervention here. Hiya, Diane. How are you?
Fine. I don't know if you recall. I'm the one that called a while ago and said that I was in love with my Note 3 like a man.
I do remember. How could I forget, Diane?
Okay. All right. I went to the beauty salon, and when I returned, it was my Win 10 Pro was doing the automatic updates. And when I came home, there was this blue screen with the error message 0XC.
You don't have to read it to me because it doesn't. What are you going to do with that number? What magic are you going to do with it? I don't know
why. Hi, the tech guy. Do you have a question?
Oops, I left Kim on. What are you going to do with that number? This drives me crazy that companies, Microsoft ought to know better, still put that kind of stuff in their error message like that's meaningful to you. What would you do with that? Nothing. That number's only meaningful to the guy who wrote the software. And even then, it's kind of marginal meaning because, frankly, computers are so dumb, they don't know what broke them. So it said, we're going to restart, right?
Hello?
Diane, I'm still here. It said we're going to restart, right? The blue screen?
My computer wouldn't do anything.
It wouldn't do anything. Saying it's Windows 10, right?
Yeah, Windows 10 Pro.
So what's supposed to happen, what I've always seen, and it's by the way, a big insult. They put a little happy face emoticon there, and it'd say, yeah. Oh, something terrible's happened, happy face. I'll give you your happy face. And then it says an error message number, which is mostly useless. Did it say any, was there any English after it, like the name of a driver or something?
No, it said a required device isn't connected or can't be accessed.
There you go. That's valuable.
But everything, it was running on battery, and it would not boot into anything. I couldn't get it into safe mode.
Yeah. So blue screens only happen when there's no possible recovery, right? That's Windows. That's your computer. And I shouldn't just say Windows. It's really your computer saying something has gone so horribly wrong that I just give up. I'm throwing up my hands. I'm going to reboot. But then it can't start up. And that tells me something really bad has happened, especially that error message. It sounds to me like some piece of hardware or your processor or your RAM or something got disconnected. Is it a laptop or a desktop?
It's a Lenovo laptop. I bought it in 2012. It has 1 terabyte, which is
that's okay.
Empty.
Yeah, no, those are good laptops. So, but 3 years old, almost 5 years old now. ThinkPads are very nice, but something's died on there. I'm almost going to guess the hard drive has died. Something serious has died on there.
Okay.
So.
So, do I just buy another hard drive and put it in?
Well, I don't know because I don't know that that's what's gone wrong. But you're going to – now, Lenovo has pretty good support. They're not going to give you a free fix, but they do have depot drop-off, especially in Chicago. I'm sure they do have depot drop-off where you can drop it off. They'll repair it, and they'll give it back to you. They will charge you for it because it's way out of warranty. It's 5 years old now.
Right.
So it could be a hard drive. It could be the memory. It could be the motherboard. It's a serious hardware failing. Something in your hardware failed.
I've been running my virus scans.
Doesn't have anything to do with that. It has nothing to do. It's not software. It's hardware.
Ah, okay.
So
thank
it's
you so much,
you're
Leo.
Welcome, love Diane. You. I'm sorry to give you the bad news, but that computer, you know, in computer years, that's 75 years old.
Oh, really? It's an old man.
You may love it like an old man, but every old man comes to the end of the line at some point, and that it may be the end of the line for that. So what you want to find out is what's wrong, and only a tech can figure that out. B, how much it's going to cost to replace it. And you may have to, if it's more than a few hundred dollars, you're probably going to want to just get a new computer.
Okay. Thank you so much. Keep your program going. I love it. I love it. I love it. Did you know that there is a foldable cell phone coming out next year?
The next Samsung Galaxy Note will be foldable. So you may love your Note 3 like a man, but you may want that Note 8 because it's bendable. I'm not going to say what that's like, but I'm just going to say, yes, I did. Samsung announced that. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, they just came out with the Note 8, which is very nice, but I wouldn't be surprised if they come out with this new, whatever it'll be, Note 9 in the next 6 months, because they've got this problem with timing, because the S8 and the S8 Plus came out. And it was pretty close to the Note 8. And they need to get these kind of synchronized up so that they can announce them all at once, like most companies do. Here we've got the S8, S8 Plus, and for those of you who want a stylus and a slightly larger screen, the Note 8. That would have been better. So my suspicion is when they do the next Galaxy S9 announcement, which they, I think, do at Mobile World Congress in the spring, they'll probably announce this new bendable thing. This is something Samsung can do because they make the OLED screens they use, and they have perfected bendable screens. Is that wild?
Yes, and it's going to be a tablet.
Well, it's going to be something the size of your current Note, but you'll open it up, and then it'll be the size of a tablet. Yes. Isn't that wild?
It's wonderful.
I think that's the kind of... So we're not really seeing a lot of innovation. Everything's just slightly improved, because what can you do with a glass slab roughly 6 inches? You can't do that much. But that's a breakthrough. And it also showcases Samsung technology that really only Samsung has. And so that's something that they could own for the next year or so before anybody else can duplicate it. So that'll be very interesting. Yes, I agree with you, Diane. I think that's something to watch. So don't trade in your Note 3 yet.
I shan't.
You love it like a man.
Right, right.
But it's okay. You're allowed to have two guys. I give you permission.
Okay.
Well, two phones anyway.
Thank you so much.
All right, Diane. Great to talk to you.
Love your program.
Thank you. And sorry about that, Lenovo. Those are great computers, but laptops wear out fast. I generally say that a computer year is about 15 human years. So 5-year-old laptop's about 75 years old. So it's maybe starting to suffer a little bit. 7-8 years, then it's probably, especially laptops, because they get thrown around. They're portable. It might be time to look at a new one there. Scott, and there's some really nice new ones, by the way. We'll talk about the new Intel Coffee Lake chip later on. Scott Wilkinson coming up next to do some home theater. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And Scott Wilkinson, speaking of vision, is here. He is our home theater guru, the editor-in-chief of AVS Forum. At avsforum.com. And I'm sad to say he was the host of our Home Theater Geeks podcast, which ended its run last week, not because of Scott, because of me. We had to cancel it. I hope you will continue doing it in some form or fashion with
AVS. Well, I certainly intend to. I'm talking with AVS Forum and seeing if we can't get it going.
We'll be glad to help you get it going, I promise.
Thank you. Yeah. And I really appreciate that. But for the moment, you know, I did that for weekly for eight years. Yeah. So I'm taking a little break.
Good. Relax. Enjoy.
That's what I'm going to do.
And
You're
going to, I promise, still always be here every week because we can't live without our home theater.
Well, I'm so glad to be here. Thank you. I'm very happy.
So I have to say I've been enjoying 4K now. Mm-hmm. I'm waiting for the Apple TV 4K, the HDR, but I noticed Netflix now, even on Netflix, is highlighting at the very top. Maybe it's just because I have a 4K TV and they're smart or what, but at the very top it says 4K HDR stuff, and they have quite a bit now on
Netflix. They do, and it's growing all the time. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I'm actually in the middle of reviewing the Vizio M65, the M series, which is a step down from their top of the line P series. And I go to Netflix and it'll tell me whether it's HDR or, well, at this point, what I've seen mostly is Dolby Vision, which is one of the two main forms of
high dynamic range. So it'll actually tell you the difference, because there's HDR10 and Dolby Vision.
Correct.
And then there's a few others.
A few other minor ones that aren't important yet, but they might very well become later. But so you go to Netflix. They have a sort of a 4K spotlight, if you will. I think Vudu does as well. There are some services now that are starting to really ramp up and provide a lot of content because there are more TVs out there now that can do it.
I'm glad. It's still,
me too.
Yeah, it's kind of it's very similar in my mind to what happened with HD, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In fact, by most accounts, the transition from HD to UHD or ultra high definition, 4K as it's often called, now with HDR, is going much faster than the transition from standard definition to high definition, SD to HD, now about 10 years ago. So, you know, it's happening faster, as in with most things in tech, right?
I mean, speeding up. It's
it's an exponential curve. I know.
I just got 4K, and
we talked last week about 8K, which I don't think is a thing. You don't need to worry about that.
I think unless you have remarkably acute vision, I think really with a nice 4K display, it's different for things like augmented or virtual reality, but for sitting in your living room watching a TV, a nice 4K display with HDR and good content is probably as good as it needs to be. Is that
I agree completely.
It's not crazy, is it? Because our eyes are limited. I mean, there's only so much acuity.
That's right. That's right. You can only see so much detail, and beyond that, it's pointless because you can't see it. Also, our eyes, our visual system, I should say, is capable of perceiving a certain dynamic range at any given time. Now, we humans are pretty remarkable because we can go outside into the bright sunlight and see dynamic range out there, or we can go into a dark theater and after a while see dynamic range in there. It takes a little bit of adaptation, as it's called, but that's because the instantaneous dynamic range of the human visual system slides up and down depending on the amount of ambient light that's around. So as long as you have in a TV image this roughly the same dynamic range as you can perceive at any given moment.
That's as good as it needs to be.
That's as good as it needs
Anything else is a numbers game at that point.
That's right. Yes, exactly right. And that's what 8K is going to be. It's going to be a numbers game. And I go, bah.
Right.
Humbug.
So Fire TV now does 4K UHD. Yep. Roku has announced new models this week and new models and updates to existing Rokus that will make it HDR10 compatible. So we're really getting, I think we're really,
there's no Dolby Vision yet, only in Roku TVs. TCL and Hisense make Roku TVs with Roku built in, and those can do Dolby Vision.
Okay.
But the standalone boxes can't.
Now, I saw last night the movie everybody, all the geeks are talking about, Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, yeah.
And Lisa made me go see the 3D version.
Oh, no.
Very disappointing.
Really?
Well, it's a murky film anyway, I think.
It is.
Have you seen it?
I have.
Okay.
I went to a Dolby Cinema in 2D.
It's very murky and dark.
Yep.
And, of course, as we know, and this was real 3D, or real D, I guess they call it, and that technology
very dim.
Is a dim technology. Cuts the luminance more than half by half.
Much more than half. More like three quarters.
So here you have a film which you can barely see anyway.
Well, that's not 100%. Well, you saw it, obviously, in a theater with conventional standard dynamic range. I saw it in Dolby Cinema.
That's what I was going to ask you. This should be an HDR movie.
Absolutely no question. In fact, the entire movie is essentially a demo of high dynamic range.
See, that's why my thought at the end of it was I should have waited and watched this at home on my 4K HDR TV. It will be better. Get the HDR UHD Blu-ray.
Yep.
And it will be better than in my home, in my theater.
Yep. Yep, I think you're right. Or go to a Dolby Cinema. Now, you have one now in San Francisco, and that's not an insignificant trip for
no,
you.
No, it's an hour away. I want to go to our local cinema. Yeah, I hope this doesn't become a trend where we see movies that are mixed, I guess, or made for the these new very high quality HDR cinemas. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because they won't look good in your this is a fairly modern cinema. They're using DLP, high quality DLP projectors. Mm-hmm. It looks good. They have Atmos sound.
Oh, that's good. And the Atmos soundtrack of Blade Runner 2049, I thought was beautiful.
It was a little loud. I actually went out and
it was super loud.
I don't know if I'm an old man, but can you turn that down? It's too loud.
You know, I measure the sound levels on all the movies I go to.
Easy, 100 dB easy.
Well, no. Actually, the average, as they measure it for compliance purposes, was actually under what's called reference level. However, the amount of bass in that soundtrack was like 5 dB more than usual.
Oh.
It was all bass. It was all low frequencies. And there are
moments when the soundtrack gets really, really loud.
Yes.
And so maybe it was just the bass, or maybe this theater.
At that moment, it was probably pretty loud.
It was very loud. I felt like it was definitely loud.
Yeah. I totally agree. But the picture is just stunning in HDR because there are a lot of scenes where you're in a dark room or a dark environment someplace with bright windows behind.
Yeah, one of the very first scenes,
exactly.
The Blade Runner and the bad guy are both in a pitch black room, but they're both sitting in front of windows.
Yep.
And I thought, that's intentional. I wish I were seeing it in a way I could see it.
In high dynamic range.
Don't go see it in
real detail in the dark. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
It was amazing.
So it sounds like this movie you have, because I didn't like the movie because I couldn't see it. Plus, at the beginning, they have an exposition of the history.
What has gone on in the last 30 years.
I couldn't read it. If you could read it, I mean, I had to take off the glasses and kind of try to read it because it was too dark to read with the glasses on.
Uh-huh,
and so
exactly.
Lisa and our son couldn't understand what was going on. I had to explain it to him afterwards. Scott Wilkinson, editor-in-chief. Find him at avsforum.com and here every Saturday talking about home theater on The Tech Guy Show. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. More of your calls right after this. I wonder if I should have gone to see it in IMAX.
IMAX would have been better.
I think it's going to look better at home than anywhere, unless I go to a Dolby Vision cinema.
Unless you go to a Dolby cinema.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Boy,
I would agree.
I was so disappointed because the reviews were raves. It's two hours and 40 minutes, so it was a long time to be sitting in the dark.
Yes. It could have been shortened. I saw many places that were just sort of weird, long pans across nothing much. And I thought, you know what? They could have easily brought this down to 2:15 at least, if not 2 hours.
Easily. But that's him. That's this guy. That's his style.
Denis Villeneuve.
He did Arrival, which was also very leisurely.
It was. Now, I liked Arrival.
I loved Arrival. But it was a different kind of movie. And I feel
it's
like
true.
He's kind of a different kind of movie maker, filmmaker. So.
Yeah. I also thought Ryan Gosling was, and Harrison Ford, for that matter, were kind of one note.
Yeah.
You know, they were just kind of. Yeah. Just the same the whole way through.
Yeah, I actually did not think it was a good movie, but I'm afraid that my opinion was colored by the fact that it was so gloomy and murky.
Yeah.
Murky is the right word. It was very murky.
Yeah, it is the right word, especially in real D3D, unfortunately.
Oh, I kept taking off the glasses so I could see. Is there anything?
What the hell's going on here?
What the hell's going on? And then it's all blurry. And I put the. By the way, there's no 3D effects in it. There's no reason to see it in 3D.
Really?
Well, I didn't notice any.
Oh, man.
It's not
I know it's a 3D conversion.
It's a conversion. Okay, so it wasn't shot in 3D.
Wasn't shot in 3D. It was it's a conversion by a very well-known company called Stereo D. But I do that too. When I go to a 3D movie, I'll take the glasses off sometimes and just look and see if I'm not really seeing any depth. And so I didn't do that.
They were doing it for depth of field. So they were doing it. The foreground was not very 3D, hardly, but the background was.
Yeah.
I don't know what the point of it was, but anyway, I'll get a UHD disc and watch it at home.
It's going to be an HDR showpiece. I was a huge fan
of the original.
I was too. In fact, they played the original the night before at the Dolby Cinema.
Oh, fun. That would be
fun. I found very interesting, they had released the final cut of Blade Runner about a month ago on UHD Blu-ray high dynamic range.
Yeah.
And with an Atmos soundtrack. And I went and saw it the night before because I wanted it fresh in my mind before I saw the new one. And the Atmos soundtrack for the original was wonderful, really excellent. But the image was not high dynamic range by any stretch.
Well, how could it be?
Well, because they've mastered it for the UHD Blu-ray in high dynamic range.
Shot on film. I guess the film
it
has...
Was, you could rescan the film.
You could rescan it.
Or you could post-process it. Hmm. It's possible to...
Darken
the blacks and right. You know, you can expand the dynamic range in post-processing. It's not as good as capturing it that way.
Yeah.
But it's pretty good.
Yeah.
They could have done. I don't know how they did it for the UHD Blu-ray. But one thing I did notice was the UHD Blu-ray, it's HDR10, not Dolby Vision. So it would have had to have been kind of regraded again Dolby Vision.
Oh, Lord.
And for a one night or very
they
short.
Didn't take the time theatrical, to do it.
They probably didn't take the time or the money to do it.
Yeah.
That's what
sense.
I figured.
That makes sense.
But it was, man, the black level was gray, and it was really...
Can you stick around for the top?
Yeah, happy to.
All right. We're going to come back, and we'll go back to you in 15.
Excellent.
Thank you, my friend. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. If you want to talk high tech, let's talk high tech. Let's do it. Let's talk high tech. Next on the line here, we got Stacy in San Pedro, California. Hi, Stacy.
I'm trying. Okay, now I think maybe you can hear me better.
I hear you great. Yeah.
Good morning and hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
What can I do for you?
Got a problem with respect to trying to figure out what's the best thing to do. I need to get a different phone. I went to apply for a job that required that I have a minimum of a 6.0 Android system, and I checked on mine, and it only has a 5.0.
And you can't up, and they won't. What is the phone you have right now?
It's a Samsung LG.
Hmm. Okay.
LG S5, I think it's called.
Okay. I wonder if it's an S5. That might be an S5 phone. Yeah,
yes,
at some point, and this is really kind of the secret and maybe not so secret shame of Android is that these companies don't keep it up to date. And it's not even really safe to use Android 5. You really should be.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you should be at least on 6 and probably 7, frankly.
Some of the phone that I had in the past, I had an LG that like pretty much before it sort of died. And other than that, I've been trying to keep the finances down.
Yeah, yeah. What's your budget?
If I could get something that's really nice for less than $350
oh, yeah.
max,
easily.
I would be happy about
so
that.
So I'm going to recommend the Motorola G5. This is a budget phone with very nice features, and it's very clean Android. It is... probably Android 7 Nougat, and will almost certainly be upgraded to Android Oreo 8 any day now. So you're going to be state of the art. And most importantly, what Google's now doing with Android is much like what Microsoft does with the Windows. They do a monthly security update. And it's really important if you're going to buy an Android phone to at least get one, if it's not the latest version of Android, which is currently version 8, to at least get one that does security updates on a regular monthly basis in a timely fashion. And the Motorola does.
Okay.
So this is an excellent phone. The G5 from Motorola.
No, that's not the G5 Plus. It's just
Oh,
G5.
You can get the Plus. Yeah, the Plus is good too. You know, it's, I think the G, you know, they have the E is even less expensive, but I think the G5 Plus is the current one. That's the one you probably want.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know whether it has a dual or a single SIM, and is that important?
It is not important in the U.S. Dual SIM phones are really for India and other nations where India has dozens of carriers, and you might go 5 miles and be on a different carrier. So they really need to have dual SIMs. But here in the United States, if you're on the big carriers, in fact, if you're on any carrier in the U.S., they go all over the country. You don't need a multiple SIM.
So will I be able to get it unlocked, and will it be
yes.
a T-Mobile carrier compatible?
Yes. In fact, you can get it from T-Mobile, in which case it will be locked, or from Motorola, and you can get it unlocked from Motorola. You might get a better deal if you get it through T-Mobile because they want to keep you as a customer. But
okay.
That's, you know, you should just at least go to the T-Mobile store and try it.
Okay.
See if you like
it. And what about that NFC? Is that an important thing?
Well, they all come with it now. The only NFC, near field communications, is a little chip in the back. You probably already fairly familiar with the idea. If you ever go through a toll with one of those Fast Track or whatever they call them cards where you just zip through the toll, it's kind of like that. That's a different technology, but the same idea. There's a chip in the back of the phone that when you touch it to an appropriate spot will trigger something in the phone. It's used for contactless payments. You know, at the drugstore, you tap your phone and
One issue that probably will be a concern to me, because my existing phone is not NFC, is how to get the data from the old to the new.
Oh, don't worry about that. They have all sorts of ways. With Google, if you're logged into a Google account, Google will just copy the stuff over. You don't have to actually touch the phones. That just makes it easy. Now, somebody's telling me, I can't believe this, but maybe it's true that the G5 Plus may not have NFC. I'm going to have to look at the tech specs for that. That seems odd. Almost everything does. But NFC at this point is really used for a limited number of things, mostly payment. So unless okay. Do you know that you need NFC, or are you just asking about it?
Basically, I was just asking because okay. I have never needed it or used it in the past.
Yeah, that's probably the case. The G5 Plus, which is the one you're interested in, starts at $230 from Motorola Unlocked. I would get the 64 gig model, which is a little more, $300. That gives you more storage, and that should get you a good 3 years before you need to get a new phone. They'll probably
The $300 version has what that the other one doesn't?
Just more memory, more storage.
Well, okay, 64 gig.
Yeah, and that's probably a good idea. Especially, are you going to use the camera?
And for sure I'll be using the GPS update and that kind of stuff. And battery issues are a concern for me.
This has very good battery life.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
What about the SIM size? I think the Motorola G5 has
It's a nano SIM. They're all. If it does, your old phone probably has a bigger SIM. But you just go to the T-Mobile store and they'll give you a new SIM.
Okay.
Not a bad idea to do that anyway, I think.
And what about when people use a smartphone as a hotspot, does that end up using up your data limits and stuff like that?
It counts against your data, yep. But on T-Mobile, you have unlimited data. So I do that all the time on my T-Mobile phone. I like that.
So, and when you've got a hotspot on your smartphone, does that mean, like, if you're tied up with, like, Cox Communications or AT&T, you don't need that anymore?
Well, I wouldn't recommend it using it as your home internet. You could, and then sometimes it'll be faster. So there are people who do that, and RVers do it all the time. So, yeah, in effect, you're getting your internet access through the LTE network of your carrier, of T-Mobile in this case. And it counts against your bandwidth caps at T-Mobile. T-Mobile's pretty liberal with their bandwidth cap. They don't slow you down unless you lose an awful lot. But they aren't crazy about the idea of using it as your home internet. I don't think I'd have a problem with that, to be honest with you. I think you could try it.
I've got one additional question that
sure.
I found to be really useful on the Samsung S5, and that was the battery replaceability.
No, nobody does that anymore.
Is that right? Because they don't need to, or why?
No, it's a shameful thing because it means a lot of phones will end up in the landfill after a few years. Batteries do need to be replaced after 2 or 3 years. The reason they don't do it anymore is because it makes a more compact phone, frankly. They could put more battery in a smaller size if they don't have to wrap it for removal.
Why it was useful to me was I was on the road doing
Uber. I agree.
Stuff.
I know.
The battery would run down, and I had a second battery, and I could just flip it in and not have to.
I loved that. I loved that feature. And the S5 was the last phone Samsung made that supported that. And even the Samsung phones don't do that anymore. You have to. But what you can bring with you, and that's what I do now, and it's what everybody does, is a external battery you can charge the phone up with. You can buy a small external battery. They're size of a pack of cards. It'll charge the phone 2 or 3 times. It'll do it pretty quickly. You just have to bring that.
I found one. I just plug it into the car interface.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to do a good job.
Well, the newer phone will charge probably faster. Newer phones do charge faster. But I bring with me, this is from a company called Aukey, but I like the Anker, A-N-K-E-R, external battery. It'll charge the phone pretty quickly. These are nice phones. This does not do wireless charging because it's a metal phone. But, you know, there's that trade-off. The phones that are made of metal can't be wireless charged. It does have a fingerprint reader, which I think is a very important, very useful feature. 12-megapixel camera, which is a very decent camera considering the price. I'm a big fan of the Motorola's. The G5 Plus is, I think, the best budget phone out there, $300 for the 64-gig version.
Leo, you've answered so many questions. I certainly appreciate you and your show. Thank you.
Well, my pleasure. I think a lot of people probably wondering the same thing. Thank you, Stacy. Do go to a company that will keep it up to date. I think that's really important. In fact, these days I kind of stick with Google. They're not inexpensive, but they're going to be the ones that are most quickly and frequently updated. Even they only guarantee 3 years. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah. And you know who's here? Scott Wilkinson, the home theater guy. Let me see if I can figure out how to give you what you like.
Which I like those numbers.
Is not this, but because we have this, we're close. We're
not
in the
coffee,
ballpark. Yeah, yeah. We're in the ballpark.
There it is.
Well, that's not what we want. We want that, and then we want this, and then we want that. And
Oh my God. You want to be fancy.
Okay, just keep talking, there. Scott. You'll be there
okay,
soon.
Okay, I'm talking.
You'll
here
be
we
on
go.
Soon. There you go. Leo had to figure
Thank
it out.
Thank you so very much.
Sure. Thank you.
Yeah, we've been talking in the chat room about LG OLED TVs, the C7 and the B7. Which is what's known as a captive model. It's only available Costco, I forget, Sam's Club. One or two of those stores is the only place you can get the B7, which is the least expensive of the LG OLEDs. And they're all the same in terms of the panel. So even all the way up to the flagship W7, they just all use the same panel. So they're going to look the same and the same processing, as a matter of fact. What's different about the thing we're talking about between the B7 and the C7 is support for Dolby Atmos, which is this overhead immersive sound system. And the B7 does not support it, and the C7 does. And so why is that important? Well, it's important only if you have an Atmos sound system, first of all, and then it's only sort of important because, as Twisted Mister, I think, said in the chat room, if you're worried about Atmos, you're probably using an external sound system and you don't need it in your TV, with one exception. And that is, what if you're watching the apps, the smart TV apps, the Netflix or whatever, from inside your TV? They may very well be able to deliver Atmos sound to your AV receiver. They certainly can't reproduce it themselves. They don't have all the speakers you need. They can maybe try to simulate it with funky little speakers in the TV, but I wouldn't even bother with that. That's ridiculous. However, getting an Atmos bitstream to your receiver in order to hear the Atmos from the internal app, that could be cool. And the way to do that is with what something called HDMI ARC, audio return channel. So what that means is you take an HDMI cable from the HDMI output of your receiver to the HDMI input of your TV, of the C7, let's say. And then if you've connected it to the right output and input, and I'll explain that in a minute, then the TV can send the sound that it generates internally from its own apps back along the same cable back to the receiver. It's actually pretty cool. But you have to make sure that your AV receiver supports ARC, and you have to make sure that the TV does. Now, I'm virtually certain that the C7 does, but probably only from one of its several HDMI inputs. So only one of them is able to send audio back to the receiver through the same cable that's sending stuff to the TV to begin with from the receiver using this ARC. And they're usually labeled on the back of the TV. I'm like I said on the radio segment, I'm reviewing a Vizio M65, and one of the HDMI ports is labeled, if the HDMI 1, parentheses, ARC. So that lets you know which input on the TV can send audio back along the same cable that it's receiving its video on. So Twisted Mister says, shouldn't be using the apps anyway. Buy a cheaper TV and get a Roku. Yes, I agree with that, generally speaking. Although, in some cases, for example, say the Roku TV from TCL, P-Series, I think it's called, you can get Dolby Vision on Roku, whereas with a Roku external box, you can't. So that's a consideration as well. Mike Heiss does good old Mike Heiss in the chat room. Hi, Mike. Does the TV support Bitstream? Many don't. That's true. Many don't. I believe the LGs do. I'm pretty sure I checked that out. I'd have to now go back. My brain is a FIFO buffer, you know, first in, first out. So I'd have to go back and check my notes. But I'm pretty sure that the LG OLEDs do support Bitstream. And it would be lossy Bitstream in this case. It would be Dolby Digital Plus, not Dolby True HD. So let's see. Web 909, how to search Netflix for 4K HDR content? Well, you first of all, you need a 4K HDR TV, because if you don't have that, it's not going to show up. So that's the first step. Once you have that TV and it's connected properly to Netflix, then as Leo said, I'm pretty sure you're going to see 4K HDR content right at the top, because they want to promote that. They want you to experience that, because they're doing a lot of work to make that ready. So anyway, thanks to everybody for your kind words and support about Home Theater Geeks. I was sorry that it had to be canceled. I am taking a little break right now, and I have to admit I'm enjoying that. doing a weekly podcast is hard work.
Oh, really?
You think? And I only did one. You did what, 30?
No, I hated to cancel the show, but we have to. It's just a financial thing. We just can't.
It's an economic reality. Got that.
I hate that. I want everybody to know it wasn't because the show wasn't fantastic. We love Scott, and
thank you.
It had nothing to do with you. It just really had to do with.
It just had to do with, you know, you gotta you gotta face reality and do what you need to do. I get that. Hopefully we will get it going on AVS Forum.
I would love that. It would make me very happy. And we'll help them in any way they want. But yeah, I think it's a good idea for you to take a little time.
Yeah.
Enjoy yourself.
I think a little break is a good thing, actually. I'm enjoying it.
I love it that you come here every Saturday. I mean, that means we get a little bit of our Scott hit here this way. So.
Well, I really appreciate it, and I'm really happy to do it. I love being a part of the Twit crew. So.
Yay. Well, you are.
Thank you.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smart watches.
coffee, whatever's on your mind, if it has to do with tech, and believe me, coffee has a lot to do with tech, I'm here to answer your questions. 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Website is freely available. There's no sign-up, no charge at techguylabs.com. Please avail yourself of that if you have a question. We've got a very good search. We've got all the shows there, more than 1,000 of them, plus audio and video from previous shows, and a chance for you to comment, too. So there's no need for you to blow a gasket yelling at me because no one can hear you in your car, although that's one of the reasons we like to yell in the car, isn't it? But you can go to the website, techguylabs.com, and leave your thoughts, your comments, your additions, your Leo, you're wrong comments, techguylabs.com. I'm pleased to say I don't get too many of those. But, you know, nobody's perfect. Next, Pomona, California. Mark on the line. Hi, Mark. Thanks for hanging on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate your show. I'm having some trouble. I have a Note 5, a Samsung, and I had an experience where I like to take pictures a lot, and I got it too full. I've got 32 gigs.
Uh-oh.
And basically filled it up, and other stuff stopped working.
Do you not have an SD card in there?
No. I'm not sure this one has it.
Oh, you know what? That was the one.
64 choices.
Yeah, that was the one where they took that out. They put it right back, by the way, in the notes.
Oh, okay.
In the Note 7 and the Note 8 has an SD card slot now. That's, boy, what a mistake that was. Thank you, Samsung.
And then the compound things, I really wanted this phone. I needed a bigger phone. I like Samsung. So I got a Verizon Unlock, and I'm on a carrier that didn't have this one. So it isn't 100% compatible. In fact, I have to turn off my phone and dial from another phone to check my voice.
That's crazy. Okay, so let's solve problem.
I need some help getting the pictures off.
Yeah, problem one first. Yeah,
do that easily for
Google
me.
Google Photos, which I highly recommend. In fact, I should have been on that phone, but maybe it wasn't, or maybe you didn't. Maybe you took it off. Samsung puts their own gallery on there, which I don't particularly like. But the Google Photos, which basically is. This is what the gallery app for the Google's Android phones has a very nice feature. It has unlimited backup of your photos. It reduces, they say in reduced quality, I can't tell the difference. They JPEG them, they squeeze them a little bit. But it's plenty fine and it's unlimited. And once you back up to Google Photos, then there's a setting in Google Photos that says delete backed up photos, which will immediately free up a ton of space on your phone.
Yeah.
And in fact, if you continue to do that, that's the best way to at least keep your phone from filling up from photos. You said you got a 32 gig model?
Yeah, I should have got a 64, but I'm looking at maybe doing an 8 next. So
yeah, when you get the 8, you'll get 64. I don't think they even sell a 32. And you get an SD card slot, which you can put all your photos on, which means you'll never run out of space again.
Yeah, that'll solve all the issues for sure.
Definitely do this on Wi-Fi. It'll be faster. Don't do it on your 3G. You'll use up all your data. In fact, you can even tell Google Photos, only backup on Wi-Fi. I think there's even a setting, only backup when I'm connected to a charger on Wi-Fi, so it won't reduce your battery life. But it's everybody should use Google Photos. It's a fantastic product.
Okay, great.
Yeah, and it's free. The backup is free. You know, when, you know, as anybody should, if something's free on the internet, you have to ask, well, why is it free? And in this case, it's free because Google is using your photos to become better at machine learning, to become better at artificial intelligence. They're not releasing them to the public or letting other people see them. They're private, but they use it for recognition purposes. The more training they can give their artificial intelligence routines with photos, the better. So, at this point, I think it's a good deal for free, and also as a selling point, it makes you want to have Google stuff. I think they really do a good job.
Well, I would be willing to pay something for it if that was the case.
Yeah, nice. It's free. Yeah.
And I had a comment about home theater. It was never in my vocabulary. I went into a Best Buy's and saw 4K UHD. I think The Martian was on, and you could see the guy's hair follicles on his face. Yeah. I thought maybe the Screen Actors Guild would, ask for some filtering.
Some actors do not like it.
So ever since then, it's been like, well, this stuff is, can be expensive depending on what you want, but it changed my interest in it. And so I listened to your show more intently and before I think I was tuning it out. So,
well, here's a perfect example. As we were talking last hour with Scott Wilkinson, I saw Blade Runner. I was very excited about the Blade Runner sequel, 2049. Everybody gave it rave reviews. It looked terrible in the theater. And it turns out it's going to look better at home on my high dynamic range television set than it would look in the theater because they didn't have the latest, greatest projection. And I foolishly went to see the 3D version, et cetera, et cetera. So I think at this point we're getting home theaters with if you have a good 4K HDR display that may look better than your movie theater.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty impressive. If you spend a little money on a surround sound system. It's a great – it's now to the point where it's affordable. It's in the few $1,000 range.
Yeah, it's pretty affordable. You're not going to spend $8 unless you really want to.
Right. And it used to be, you know, only movie stars had home theaters, right? That was a status symbol. When you go into Beverly Hills, oh, yeah, come into my home theater, presses a button, the curtains close, the lights go down, the movie comes up. You can do that at home now, and it looks great. Yeah. Which, of course, scares the heck out of movie theaters.
Yeah.
Glad you listened. Thank you.
There's always a place for them. It's just going to be more entertaining.
I like going to the theater, putting my feet up. But this was the first time I'd gone to the theater where I thought, you know, this would have been better watching it at home. And that is bad news for movie theaters. You don't want that to happen to us.
I haven't seen it yet, and I took your comments about the 3D thing seriously.
Don't see it in 3D.
Not 3D.
Yeah, see it in 2D and you know, with a good projection system because it's a dark, dark, dark film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. On the other hand, if you watched it, this would be a bad one to stream, for instance, on 4K with Vudu or Apple TV or any of the 4K streams because one thing they do with 4K is they compress it a lot when they're streaming it over your internet because, you know, bandwidth is not infinite. That compression really shows up if there's big blocks of color, particularly black. And, in fact, it even shows up on cable television. If I'm watching HBO, I can see they call it macro blocking. And you've probably seen it looks like banding because they can't do a solid black. The compression turns it into bands of black, of increasingly darker black. And that is extremely annoying on a motion picture that has a lot of dark scenes. It ruins it. So that's an example of if you really – that movie, you're going to want to have a 4K UHD Blu-ray player connected, you know, to a good 4K HDR TV. And then you'll be able to see it the way it was intended. And I think, frankly, better than many motion picture theaters. That's got to be a concern. And I wouldn't be surprised if this director, Villeneuve, gets told, don't do that again. That's biting the hand that feeds you. That makes a movie that people aren't going to want to see in the theater. And that's not good for movie theaters. Our local movie theater, they had to basically remodel. They now have they have barca loungers. They have you press the button, the footrest comes out. They have food. They have a tray table. They're trying to duplicate. And by the way, doing that eliminated a ton of seats in that theater. But they're trying to duplicate the home experience. Except if it's still better at home because I'm closer to the screen, so the screen is bigger, and it's better quality, and I'm at home. I can pause it. In a movie that's 2 hours and 40 minutes, which this new Blade Runner is, it is nice to be able to pause it. I'll leave it at that. You can guess why. 8888 Ask Leo, techguylabs.com. More calls in just a little bit. We're talking high tech. Anything on your mind? If you want to talk about the new Google announcements, the new Apple phones, I've been playing with I've had the iPhone 8 Plus now for a week and some days, and I have to say, the more I use it, the more I feel like, you know, it's not that much better than the 7. If you've got a 7, stick with it. Leo, what do you think? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Quicken Loans is the best mortgage lender in the country, easily. In fact, if you go to the Quicken Loans website, you'll see all those J.D. Power customer satisfaction awards. But they've won a place in my heart, not only because they're great, but because they honor the geek. They've created Rocket Mortgage, which is an entirely online mortgage approval process. What a relief this is. We just celebrated yesterday
the fourth anniversary of buying our house, Lisa and my house, and we went through the worst process. It wasn't with Quicken Loans. It was with a big bank, which I regret now. But it took them more than a month to approve our loan. We almost lost the house. The seller was going, what's going on? See, when you're buying a house, being pre-approved, they're good for this. They've got the loan, you know, makes a huge difference. It puts you front of the line when you're buying a house. So if you're thinking about buying a house or going to open houses tomorrow, or maybe you're thinking about refinancing, this probably is a good time to do it. I think interest rates are only going to ratchet up. You want to go to rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. And the thing is, you'll love this. You can do that, by the way, on your phone or your tablet. And that's it. You won't have to go up to the attic to go through and find your pay stubs or your bank statements. You won't have to call the bank saying, can you mail me my print statements for the last 15 years? You don't have to do that. They do it all online, rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. They have trusted partnerships with all the financial institutions. Of course, it's Quicken Loans. So all you have to do is give them permission. They've got everything they need. And literally, remember, it took months to get a loan from this big bank 4 years ago. Not going to take months. Not going to take days. It's not going to take hours. It's going to take minutes. Literally, within a few minutes, you will get approved for the loan that's right based on your income, assets, and credit. You can choose the home loan options that you want and find a loan that's perfect for your needs. I love it. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand what's going on fully, and then mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Maybe you're not buying today. Please bookmark it. So when the time comes, you'll know. Oh, I got it right here. It's in my browser. RocketMortgage.com/tech guy. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. And MLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. And we thank them, Rocket Mortgage, for their support of the Tech Guy podcast, making this possible, coming to you over the internet airwaves. Brian on the line from Charleston, Indiana. Do you say Charlestown or Charleston?
Charleston, Indiana.
All right. Hi. Welcome, right. Brian. Good to have you.
No, thank you for taking my call. My situation is I got three Raspberry Pis. Each one has a Logitech webcam.
Okay, I'm going to just tell you how hungry I am. I just went through my mind, that sounds good. But you're not talking about actual pie. You're talking about little board, $35 with single board computers that are really kind of amazing. You got three of them, huh?
Yeah, and each one's hooked up to Logitech webcam.
Nice.
And they're,
so you're trying to build a security cam, doing a security camera system.
Right.
Yeah, that makes
sense. On the cheap, but, you know, if I'd really spent all that kind of money, I could have probably got a real security camera system, but, hey, it's fun.
No, yeah, you don't do this to save money. You do this for fun.
Yeah.
Right?
But I've got three of them. They got Logitech cameras on them, and they work pretty good. But last night, I had an intruder come in.
Oh, no.
And they captured the motion pretty well, but it wasn't lit well enough.
I hope the intruder was a raccoon or something.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
It captured the motion of the, well, it captured the silhouette, okay?
Yeah, because it's dark. What you need is a camera designed for the dark, an infrared camera.
Yeah, if I had that kind of money. But I do have the Hue light system.
Ah, now. So you could have the lights come on when the raccoon comes. Yeah. So what?
So I trigger my Hue light system to come on when it senses motion.
I love that. So you already have the Raspberry Pi and motion detection. That's working, right?
Right.
So what you need is a way.
The silhouettes of the motion, you know.
Right. This is fun because did you use a tutorial to build this like in Make Magazine or something like that?
Yeah.
So this is where making gets really fun. So you're following a cookbook recipe,
and you got
it all going. But now you're saying, now what I'd like to do is extend it, and this is where you're going to be digging into the guts of the thing. So do you have some Python code? Is that what's running to do the motion detection?
In the background. It's a little over my head.
Yeah. So what you need is something that will interface with the Hue lights. Hue lights are supported by their own. They have a dedicated hub. But you can also use hubs like the SmartThings hub. You can use other devices. And what you'll need, and I actually, truthfully, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to point you to exactly what you need. But what you're going to need is a device that you can trigger in that same Python script. You've got one line that says turn the camera on. You're going to have a line right after it that says, and turn on the hue lights. Maybe do it before. Turn on hue lights, now turn the camera on. But the, that particular line is or block of code is going to be specific to the interface that controls the hue lights. You know, there's two ways to do this. There's the mechanical way to do it, which somebody in the chat room is saying, you know, just attach a relay. It could be any kind of lights. And then, you know, the relay goes, and the lights come on. Or since you say, well, I've got these internet connected lights, these hue lights, then it's done in software. And you'll need a way to trigger the hub or trigger the hue hub.
Something like IFTT.
That might be a good – absolutely. IFTT can absolutely control the hue lights via either the SmartThings hub or their own hue hub. In fact, I used to have an IFTT – that's a website, ifttt.com.
Yeah,
if this, then that, IFT, this, TT, then that, .com. You can have a trigger. I used to have one. IFTT trigger that would say when the sun goes down, turn the lights on, right? So this would be very similar to that. So if you already know how to control if this then that through your Raspberry Pi and your Python code, you're practically done.
Okay, I'll have to look into the Python.
That's your research. But that, you know what? That's easy. That's somebody a lot of that's something everybody does. You could probably Google if, you know, IFTTT Raspberry Pi and get the code, paste that in.
Okay.
This is what this is going to be. This look, it's not going to be easy, but at the but it's not going to be impossible. And you know, it's not going to be you're going to be tearing your hair out. But and once you get it working, you're going to feel great. And now you're going to take in a big step towards designing more of your own projects instead of just doing cookbook stuff. This is great. This is what you. This is why you did that.
Right.
You didn't, maybe you saved a little money on a security camera, but really the real reason to do these projects is to learn.
Yeah.
And that's what you're up to. So, yes, glad you mentioned IFTTT. That's a perfect way to do it.
All right. Yeah. I'll look into that later.
Yeah. So now it's a simple Google. Just, you know, how do I send a signal to IFTTT? The neat thing about the Raspberry Pi, it's just, you know, it's the size of a Altoids tin, you know, mint tin or deck of playing cards. The reason I mention the Altoid tin, sometimes people make cases out of those Altoids mints, those super strong peppermint tins for the Raspberry Pi. So it's about that size of a deck of cards. It has on it kind of all the things you need to make it a real computer. It has an HDMI port so you can connect it to a screen. It has two USB ports so you can connect it to a keyboard and a mouse. It has an Ethernet. Different Raspberry Pis have different features, but it has either an Ethernet cable or a Wi-Fi capability, or you can add Wi-Fi via the USB. So it is connected to the net. So you can have the Raspberry Pi ping, send a signal out. When it sees motion, the Raspberry Pi's got one of the things that makes the Raspberry Pi great, it has what's called a GPIO, General Purpose Input-Output pins, that you can connect things to. So he's got a motion connector and a camera connected to those. Actually, the camera's probably connected to the there's a special camera connector on the Raspberry Pi. But he's got the motion detector connected to the GPIO. So the motion detector is a standalone little unit. It sees motion, sends a signal down into that pin on the Raspberry Pi. The Raspberry Pi goes, there's motion. What do I do then? And looks at the software that you've written and says, I turn on the camera. Now you're going to have it look at the software you've written and see, send a signal over the internet to if this then that we've seen motion, and then turn on the camera. If this then that is going to handle the back end of the logic. It's going to say, I got pinged by a Raspberry Pi. Let's see they call them recipes. What recipe I have here on if this then that. If you haven't played, this is actually a good way to get started. And if you've got kids, great way to teach them about electronics and computers and programming and logic. IFTTT.com. It's a free system. And you can write little scripts. You can have your phone give you a notification when somebody comes in the door. Or you can have the lights come on when it's sunset. You can have it ping you when it's time, when rain is coming, things like that. It's fun to play with. And it's actually real programming. So you're starting your journey as a geek. That's my secret ambition, to turn you all into geeks. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Speaking of geeks, here's a guy who's put a hidden camera in his bow tie. I Googled Raspberry Pi surveillance system, and this is a make project that you can use. And that's what's great about the Raspberry Pi. You can get all of this, you know, basically without knowing what you're doing. That's the downside of this. You don't have to really know anything. You just have to follow these steps. The next step is then to customize it. And that's where it gets fun. That's where it gets interesting. He's been everywhere. He's back from Ireland, where he did some amazing pictures. Johnny Jett. Good to see you, Johnny. You're a little tired, a little sleepy.
Yes, I am Johnny Jetlag today.
Johnny Jetlag.
I do own the domain, by the way.
You do, really?
Yeah, but there's nothing on there.
Well, you got to think about that. You might be able to find something to do with that. There's jet lag. Do you ever try any of the jet lag remedies that are out there?
No, you know, I really believe jet lag is a state of mind.
No,
it's not true. You know what?
Ask these guys. They're here from Australia. They're going, no, it is not. How long have you been in the States?
2 weeks.
2 weeks. Oh, so you got over it, but it took about a week, I bet, to get over it, right?
Yeah, a few days. Yeah.
Oh, he's going back to Perth tonight. Oof.
When I land in Australia, you know, usually we land at 7 a.m. and it's, you know, and after a 14-hour flight,
so
you're
supposed
sleep.
To walk around with your eyes open and yes. get all that sunshine in there.
Exactly.
You're still going to be exhausted for.
But I try and take a nap for 10 minutes.
1 week to feel normal. I'm just now feeling normal from going to France. That was a 9-hour difference.
It takes time.
It takes time.
I'm in perpetual jet lag. I mean,
that's true. So. You travel a lot. Johnny joins us every week to help us travel better with the help of technology, usually with a website or an app. Or what do you got for us?
I got both for you. Actually, the website is fairfetcher.com. F-A-R-E.
Oh.
Actually, it's Fairfetch, sorry. F-E-T-C-H.com.
Okay.
So it's an app, but that's their URL. And it's a free app for AOL and Android. But what these guys do is they try and find you the cheapest fare. So let's say, you know, you're not really good at finding cheap tickets, but they have a whole community that are. And people who do have a knack at finding good airfares, like myself, you can actually make some money because you can sign up, become one of their fare fetchers. And then – so let's say if I'm a consumer and I want to go from New York to L.A., I can go on their website, put in one way, round trip, whatever, what airlines I want to fly, if I want to do nonstop or not, and then what the price I want to pay. And so if they can find a price below that, they'll automatically book you. You can't change it. So it's kind of like Priceline in that sense. But you could, so you put your credit card up front. But if they don't find a fare below what you're asking, then they just come back and say sorry, and you can keep trying.
So you can become a fair – I bet this is like a game for the people who do it. Like, let's see how low I can get.
Yeah, I mean, it is to me too. A lot of my friends and family are always emailing me, say, hey, I can't –
You're a fair fetcher for your family. Yeah.
I am. I don't have time to do it for these guys, but
– So you can do this on the web at fairfetch.com, or they have Apple and Android apps as well.
Yes, it's a unique idea because you know what? There's so many people out there who have knacks at finding good deals and different tricks
and they want to show off, right?
Yeah, and plus I don't know what kind of money they make, but I think a lot of it's pride as well.
I think so. I think that people would do this just because they could. That's neat.
Yes.
Book a flight, one way round trip. So, wow, I don't even want to know if they can get me a better deal. All right,
but warning: if you know whatever price you put
committing.
In,
you're committed.
You are committed.
Yeah.
Once
you know
it's
what?
Done, it's done.
I bet you that's how they get paid. Maybe they split the difference or something like that. Right?
I don't think they split the difference because there's not a lot of money in airline fares. That's why travel agents charge.
Yeah, but
a
if I say I want a fare for $200 and they find one for $159, I'm going to give them $200. They're going to have $40 extra, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe that's their profit. I don't know.
I'm not sure, but I don't think that's how it's working. But
well, you pay $200 though, right? Even if they find a $149.
Whatever price you put in, whatever
you
price
pay you
put
what
in.
You put in. So, they have incentive to go under it.
Yes. So, yeah, maybe you're right. So, let's say I say,
there's
I
a little
fly
something
New York,
left
LA.
Over. That doesn't just go up in smoke. Somebody keeps that. Maybe
I'll become a fair fetcher.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Now you get where I'm going. All right. So, that's a website, but it's also an app. So, I'm not going to let you off the hook, though. I want an app.
No, that's actually the app.
That's
so now
the app.
Here's a website that's actually a service, but it's called ask.vet. Have you heard of this one?
Ask.vet. Wait a minute. Let me guess. You're asking a veteran or a veterinarian?
Veterinarian.
Okay. It's one or the other.
So there's a lot of people who travel, and this is actually not meant to be a travel website, but I'm
But this is
making
a great idea.
It is. For $99 a year, you can get unlimited texts to a vet asking all kinds of questions like, you know what, my dog has diarrhea. You know, what should I do? Or he just ate the bar of chocolate. Should I take him to the hospital?
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. It also includes 6 phone calls with a veterinarian a year. They have webinars.
If you have a pet, you should have a vet, right?
Yeah, but you know, taking it to the vet every time costs money. And sometimes, most of the time, you know, you don't really need to take it to the vet. So if you can quickly text somebody and say, hey, should I be bringing this to the vet, bringing my animal to the vet, yes or no, and, you know, they will let you know.
Ask.vet, which, by the way, is a very good domain name.
It is.
Ask.vet. Or you can text vet to 67076.
And tell them your concern.
I agree. This may not bill itself as a travel site, but when you're traveling, you don't have access to your vet.
Exactly. That was my thinking. Someone told me about it. I don't have a dog or a cat. And
no, you have a child. That's more than enough.
But there are a lot of physician systems
like this too, where you can have a physician on call via text and Skype.
Right. And you know, speaking about physicians, you know, I go to a dermatologist all the time because I had a skin cancer scare.
That's right.
And a couple times I've gone to the doctors or different ones, and they give me totally different, and I don't understand why there's not a website out there where, you know, patients or doctors can upload photos of, like, say, a skin cancer.
Oh, I bet there is. I bet there is. Folks, find it and give it to Johnny Jett. You won't get any money, but you'll have eternal glory when he mentions your name. On his website.
But it should be universal because there's so many different...
Yeah, dermatology.vet. No, that's wrong. Huh? HIPAA. Oh, that's... No, you can do it. You can give up your rights. John is saying, they wouldn't do that because of patient privacy. But if you're the patient, you can do anything you want.
Plus, you don't even need to say what your name is. Just say, hey.
Hey, what's this?
Or the doctor should be asking a whole bunch of doctors saying, hey, what do you think this is? And get a general consensus.
Oh, wait a minute. Alex C. says, just do it at Reddit. You'll get many opinions.
Yeah, you'll get a lot of opinions there.
JohnnyJett.com. That's his website. A good place to go for great articles. Johnny's always posting. He has a travel newsletter, has numerous travel newsletters, and has fare finders and all sorts of stuff. It is the ultimate site. If you're a traveler, you've got to bookmark that. And if you like looking at great pictures, Johnny's on Instagram at JohnnyJett. He tweets all the time. In fact, he tweets all the links of the things he talks about on this show at his Twitter account at JohnnyJett. And he's also – can people follow you on Facebook or is that your private page?
No, I have a private and a personal.
So there's a public page.
It's JohnnyJett 747, which is actually retiring. The United one's retiring November 7th, and I'm going to be on that flight.
We had somebody in studio the other day who was on the – was it the last Delta 747? Local 747. I mean national, right? Because they don't use the jumbo jets.
Just Delta and United were using the 747, but the last one with United's retiring.
I'm a fan, I got to say, of the new A380s, the Airbuses. Those are big planes.
A350. Beautiful plane.
You like the 350 too. Huh? I'll have to try. I don't think I've been on that one. I have to try it. Johnny Jett. See, he's a travel guru. Go to JohnnyJett.com. And, of course, he joins us every Saturday, sometimes Sunday, depending on his travel schedule, to talk about travel better through tech. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More your calls right after this, boo-boo. I can send pictures of questionable moles to my doctor. My doctor loves I'm on Kaiser. They are always saying, just send us a picture. They would far prefer.
But do they ask multiple doctors? It's just going to one doctor.
It's going to your doctor. Right.
But it should, but it should but be going
I have
to a
it,
whole
well, wait a minute. It
panel.
Probably, yeah, I agree.
That's my point.
It goes to my doctor, and then he'll refer it to a dermatologist if he wants a second opinion.
But it shouldn't just be about dermatology. It could be anything. Let's say if you have something wrong with your lungs, put the x-ray up there and have a panel of doctors from around the world say this is what the problem is.
Doctor, I have a strange mole, and I'd like to know what is the story with this mole? Yeah. Sing along with me. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones. John is in Jasper, Alabama. Hello, John.
Hello, Leo. How are you this afternoon?
I am well. Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
To ask you probably one of the lowest tech questions you'll get all day long.
I love it.
Okay. And by the way, I will tell you the reason I cannot switch to Verizon or T-Mobile or Sprint is when I go back to my hometown in Kentucky, they have no towers.
So it's AT&T for you, right?
It's AT&T for me.
Yep. That's fine. By the way, and you know, you see these ads, and I'm sure you see them where Verizon says, we've got the best nationwide coverage. It doesn't matter. It's how it works where you are that matters.
That is right. Hey, next time you go to a Walmart and go back in the Straight Talk section and look at the CDMA map, there's a big, big hole right in the center of Kentucky. And that's the reason.
For the longest time, you couldn't use, I'm trying to think, who was the carrier? I think it was AT&T. You couldn't buy an iPhone in Vermont. Because Vermont had zero AT&T coverage. They literally, in the first few years of the iPhone, you couldn't get one because it wouldn't work. Remember, this was when iPhones were only on AT&T. So, yeah, there are holes. It's important to remember when you see these advertisements, it doesn't matter what nationwide coverage is, unless you're a truck driver. It matters what it is where you are.
Years ago, if you got this a second, years ago, Labor Day 2010, I flew from Nashville to Grand Island, Nebraska.
Yes.
And I had AT&T Go phone.
Yeah.
And I landed there in Grand Island and had zero coverage. And
yet, by the way, AT&T is widely considered, along with Verizon, to have almost universal coverage. It just shows you.
That they don't. But then later, when I went back a year later, I had Straight Talk, which had a contract with MCI, which... Sprint had the GSM coverage in Nebraska.
Go. Yeah.
West of
Lincoln. It's unpredictable. Now, I think things might change a little bit. The T-Mobile and Sprint are trying to merge. It'll probably happen at the end of the month.
Well, what are they going to... I mean, T-Mobile is GSM and
Sprint CDMA. Well, all that's going away with LTE. LTE is replacing both. So... You're right. For a long time, we had to say, well, there's phones for AT&T and T-Mobile, and there's phones for Sprint and Verizon, and never the twain shall meet. But that's changed a lot. Everybody's going LTE, and that's going to eliminate all of that confusion, thank goodness.
Well, what I've got is I'm a radio station in Jasper, Alabama. I'm getting ready to hopefully sell.
Okay.
It's not, but where I'm going... The outskirts of Spartanburg, South Carolina, same problem is bad AT&T coverage.
Oh, no. So you're going to have to get a new carrier.
Well, they want to because, again, T-Mobile, Sprint, Verizon. Don't when I go back to my hometown in Kentucky.
Oh, you want both.
Don't have towers.
Ah, so you're looking for a phone or a company that will work in both spots.
Right. Here's what I'm asking. I have an LG G5. I'm low tech. I like a phone where you can change the battery.
That's a nice phone.
Never had an iPhone for that reason.
Nice phone.
And the cheaper, I've had some cheaper LG phones, in fact, branded phones, that work better than this G5. And I'm just wanting to know, should I consider changing brands of phones? Are there now? I had a borrowed phone in the control room back several months ago, and I had a bar. I think it was a cheap ZTE or something, very, very cheap. And but with this LG G5, I don't even get a bar. Just occasionally.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because those of us who review phones, and I'm not a professional smartphone reviewer, but there are people who really focus on this, rarely will review this most important feature, how well it receives phone calls. How good is the antenna system? And so there are variations in the quality of antenna systems. In general, because we got rid of extendable external antennas. Remember the old days of phones, you'd have an antenna that would slide up? That was the best solution, but people didn't want that. They'd break off, and they didn't like how they looked. So all the companies started building the antennas into the phones, which compromised the quality, frankly, the ability to get a signal. So all phones nowadays have, with varying degrees, poor reception compared to the old days. But where would you find reviews for reception? I don't know. I really don't know. That's kind of one. Okay, I'll give you a couple of things that might help. First of all, you could go to one of the carriers you're considering. Since you're already on AT&T, let's say AT&T. When you get to Spartanburg, go to AT&T and say, look, I don't get any reception here. Give me a femtocell. Now, that's the generic term. They have another term. I don't know what AT&T calls it. Every company has a different term, a cell repeater or something, but it's a device that you connect. We actually use one for T-Mobile here in our little radio station because we have a number of users, employees who use T-Mobile, but we don't have any T-Mobile reception here. As soon as you go out the building, it's fine, but inside the building. So we got T-Mobile to set up a femtocell. It connects to your LAN, your Ethernet, and uses your internet connection to provide cell service to your phone inside. And to your phone, it looks just like cell service. So that's one possible solution in Spartanburg, is get an AT&T femtocell. And usually, if you really beg and plead and say, I'm going to change companies, if you don't get me this, they'll give it to you for free. You plug it into your internet, and now that whole area will have, in effect, its own dedicated cell tower. And that can solve the problem. So that's one way to do it. Another way to do it, we were talking earlier about dual SIM phones. They're not sold in the U.S. generally, but it would be conceivable to buy a phone that has two SIM slots. The one that you can get in the U.S. that does is the OnePlus One. It's an Android device. I love them. OnePlus Ones often have dual SIMs. Then you can get, believe it or not, you get an AT&T SIM and a T-Mobile SIM, or whatever it is that works in Spartanburg, and then use the SIM that works in the region that you're in. Same phone, both. But if you're saying which phone has the best reception, that's one I'm not sure I can give you a good answer on, just because one of the reasons reviewers don't test it is it's variable. You could test it if you had an expensive lab, and you could set it up so that you would have, you know, imitation towers in the lab, and the lab was isolated from the actual towers, and then you could test it. But it takes a lot of equipment to do it right. For me to test it without any of that equipment, it'd just be rule of thumb. Well, it seems like it's pretty good. I got four bars. Even the bars in the phone, that's misleading. Apple, when the iPhone 4 came out, remember, and if you held the iPhone 4 in the most natural but a certain way, you could watch the bars disappear. The antenna would stop working because you were actually detuning it. And since you work in radio, you know what that means. You're detuning the antenna by holding the phone. So what was Apple's fix? So they just changed the software so the bars didn't show that. They didn't actually make it better. They also gave away a free dollar bumper. It's a plastic bumper to keep your hands off the antenna. Cases can change it. Absent an antenna, since you're in radio, you understand how antennas work a little bit. Absent an antenna, no antenna inside the phone is going to work very well. Maybe look for a phone with not a metal case but a glass case. Metal, of course, blocks RF, radio frequency. So that would be one solution for you. The new iPhone has a glass case. That's what allows it, by the way, to do wireless charging. You'll never get a metal phone that'll do wireless charging. And I'm going to guess, because it's a glass back, more fragile, but I'm going to guess that actually works better for signal propagation. You know, it's a conundrum. And anything I would tell you about signal strength and phones that get better signal would be purely anecdotal. Absent this, you know, FCC quality testing lab, I don't know of any way to really know which phone is going to do the best. I would say try the femtocell solution. Pick a carrier, and then wherever that carrier doesn't work, go to them and say, look, I'm going to change carriers unless you give me one of these little cell sites in my house. That will solve the problem. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you've got a better solution, a couple of ways you can do it. Call me is the best. I'd love to get you on the show. 888-827-5536. Or go to our website, techguylabs.com. And there's a comment section. We divide the show up into, the website up into shows, and then each show into hours. Each hour into calls. You can go right to that call and add your 2 cents. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Oh, it's time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones, a lot of that. Smart watches. One of our visitors in studio, Shane, has a Android Wear, a Moto 360. Fossil. You have the Fossil. It's one of the round Android Wear watches, which I really like. I love my Moto 360, and I also had the LG. And something of concern for people who like Android Wear. This was a Google platform. They promoted heavily over the last few years. Motorola made some really nice ones. Is that on Wednesday, when Google announced all their new stuff, they didn't mention at that event. They mentioned, you know, phones and laptops and cameras. They didn't mention watches. There was no mention of Android Wear. And in fact, if you went to the Google store right after the event, as I did, and spent many thousands of dollars on Google stuff, you might have noticed that, in fact, the wristwatches are gone. LG, was it LG or Motorola? I think it was LG announced they're not going to do any Android Wear watches anymore. Motorola has not updated their watch in some time. I'm wondering if it's the end of the line for Android Wear. Apple so dominates the smartwatch business, easily outgunning Android Wear, that I have a feeling that it just wasn't a great business for anybody but Apple. Fitbit, of course, is the number one wearable for fitness, but I think even Fitbit is starting to get slowly knocked down by Apple. Fitbit announced last week a Fitbit watch. Did you hear about it? Anybody review it? Anybody talk about it? No. I think if you're interested in smartwatches at this point, that the two choices at this point are Apple and Samsung. Fortunately, Samsung still makes some pretty nice smartwatches. They're not based on the Android Wear platform. They're based on the Tizen platform. But I actually am quite fine. I might even prefer it over the Apple Watch because I like round watches. The Apple Watch, the square form factor, rectangular form factor, is kind of, to me, not the best. But the Samsung S3 Frontier is, I think, a very nice smartwatch built on Samsung's Tizen operating system, which Samsung created, I think, because they didn't want Google to own them outright with Android. So I think, you know, if you like smartwatches, really it's going to come down to Samsung and Apple. And I wonder, really, I've never felt like this is a must-have product. And I know Apple now, they say they're the number one smartwatch maker in the world. They're actually, they're the number one watchmaker in the world. They actually beat Rolex in dollar volume, billions of dollars last year for Apple watches. And I have to say, I see more Apple watches around than I used to. I think it's a fashion item now. I don't think it's a technology item. And I think increasingly Apple is a fashion company. It's a status symbol. having the latest iPhone or the latest Apple Watch. You know what they did with the new Apple Watch? It looks exactly like the old Apple Watch. That's not good for a status symbol because no one knows who you got the latest one, right? So they very cleverly, they put a bright red dot on the winding stem that has no purpose at all except as a subtle or maybe not so subtle signal, I have the latest one. I have the Series 3 because I have a red dot. Wow. That tells you something about Apple and their market. That really does. In fact, I think, and I've mentioned this before, that's the reason for the very ugly, inexplicable notch on the next iPhone, the iPhone X, which comes out sometime. They say November 3rd. Good luck getting one by then. But that notch on the screen is incredibly ugly. But I realized that's not, there's no technical need for that. That's there so that when people see you with your new iPhone X, they'll go, oh, that's the new iPhone, isn't it? That's the new one. Apple has become a fashion company. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. It's, you know, it's business. Good article in The Guardian this week, the British paper The Guardian. I thought this was something I'd been talking about for the last few weeks. The guy who created the like button for Facebook and a number of other Silicon Valley, you know, gurus are now becoming what we call refuseniks. They're turning their back on technology. The guy who created the like button, Justin Rosenstein, he did it for Facebook. He feels like he's created an addictive technology that is taking people over people's minds. He now says when he buys a new phone, he has his assistant put parental controls on and not tell him the password to keep him from downloading Facebook and other apps, distracting apps. He calls the Facebook like button, again, which he invented, bright dings of pseudo pleasure that can be as hollow as they are seductive. And there is a move. I don't know if this will gain ground or not, but there is a move afoot among people. Well, Steve Jobs famously wouldn't let his kids have iPhones or iPads. Bill Gates, very much restricted. The people who understand this technology best, who are designing this technology, understand that they're designing, in effect, addictions. They're making addictive technology, and there's nothing more addictive than social media, than the need to check the Twitter stream or look for your Facebook likes or see how many followers you have. This is a very interesting trend in Silicon Valley, that the people who invented this stuff are now so afraid of it because they, more than anyone, are aware of what can it do to you to completely... We live in... What is the phrase now they're using? Continual partial attention. We aren't paying attention to anything. You can't go to... You can't watch a movie. Test yourself. Can you watch a movie at home without pulling out your iPhone or your tablet to just spend a little time on it, a little checkout, see what's going on while you've been watching? Continuous partial attention. I don't know if there's anything to do about it, but it's probably a good thing to be aware of. Might be a good read. the guy, by the way, the king of this, a guy I've interviewed named Nir Eyal, he wrote a book called Hooked. That is the Bible in Silicon Valley, How to Build Habit-Forming Products. He is a psychologist who knows how to manipulate people. He has big conferences. He's written books. He says the technologies we use have turned into compulsions, if not full-fledged addictions. It's the impulse to check a message notification. It's the pull to visit YouTube, Facebook, or Twitter for just a few minutes, only to find yourself still tapping and scrolling an hour later. He says, none of this is an accident. It's all just as their designers intended. Nir Eyal uses a Chrome extension called DF YouTube, which scrubs out notifications so he doesn't get pinged or bugged. He also recommends an app called Pocket Points that rewards you for staying off your phone.
Well, thank you for paying attention to this show, and I hope you hope you're not looking at your phone while you're listening. Don't you feel bad for teachers, school teachers these days? How do they keep a kid's attention for 50 minutes in a classroom? They have to put on costumes and sing songs and dance. It all goes back, and I'm gonna do some research and find out more, to a behavioral psychologist from Stanford named B.J. Fogg, who was the first to figure out how to get people addicted, hooked to software. Good article. We'll put a link in the show notes, techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. Let's go to Vino. I like the name. Vino in Las Vegas. Hi, Vino.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon.
Am I saying your name right?
Yes.
In vino veritas, as they say. What can I do for you?
Correct, Mundo. Okay, I have a question.
Yes.
I have a Sony 65-inch 2160p smart 4K TV.
Nice. Okay? Yes, very nice TV.
I bought it 2 years back. Now, I tell you what happens. When I turn it on, first the word Sony comes in the middle of the screen.
Yeah.
Then it becomes dark.
Yeah.
Then on the top of the screen, there's some wording, HD 480 or whatever.
Yeah, it tells you what the connection is, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And then there's another thing, something that comes at the bottom of the screen, and then it becomes dark, okay? And then another 30 seconds later, it might actually go to a particular channel, okay? But very often, it just becomes dark and doesn't come back on at all.
Okay.
So I have.
What is the source material for the TV? Is it a cable box or?
Yeah, it's a direct TV box.
Okay.
Satellite box.
So what happens? What it's telling you is there's this handshake that goes on via HDMI. I presume you have an HDMI cable from the satellite box going into the
yes.
TV. There's a little handshake, and that's what those letters at the top that fleetingly are there are telling you is what it thinks it's getting. It sounds like it thinks it's getting something it's not. Would be my guess. So a couple of things to try. One is can you ever get a picture out of it?
Well, as I said, what happens is then I have to press the on button again.
Yeah.
And the light doesn't come on at all. You're at the bottom of the TV.
You're forcing another handshake.
The third time when I press, then the TV comes on.
So you turn it off and on. Basically, you're turning off and on again. Forcing a second handshake. So that kind of confirms my initial diagnosis, which is that the initial handshake is wrong. This is, by the way, the bane of my existence. Anybody who has HDMI, very common problem. The best way to solve this is to go into the DirecTV box and in the settings there, tell it what you want. You know, it's probably that likely it's not a 1080p box. It might be that part. That's part of the issue. But tell it what exactly you want. 1080p or you know, I don't know if it'll do 4K, but if it will, tell it 4K. And then same thing on the TV, because what's happening is the auto detection is failing the first time through. Not unusual. And the only way to kind of fix this is to manually say, no. Don't do auto detection. I want you to be receiving this. I want you to be sending this. Get them to be sending and receiving the same thing. It will, by the way, speed up that process. Most things are by default auto detecting. And part of the reason is that DirecTV box may be changing resolution. When you change channels, ESPN 720p, but HBO's 1080i,
And then maybe you get go to something that has a 4K source. Nothing, I don't think, on your DirecTV will be 4K. But let's say you go to your Netflix and it's a 4K source. That's going to be 2160p. And all of a sudden, you've got all these different settings. Your TV's doing its best, but it's gotten confused. And it's in other words, the handshake has failed. You may also see if replacing the HDMI cable with a more modern working cable might help. It's very annoying. It's a universal problem, frankly. There's the usual stock answers of update, making sure the firmware is up to date on the TV set, that you have the latest DirecTV satellite software on your satellite box. But I would actually see if maybe get a more modern cable. Sometimes that helps as well. But this is the mess, the world we live in. It's called HDMI handshake. It doesn't work very well. Best thing to do is to get rid of the handshake as much as possible by setting actual settings in both ends. Lucas, Santa Barbara, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Lucas.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling. What can I do for you today?
I am moving to an area that has, it's a rural area where I am going to have to unhook from my cable internet. And I do a ton of video streaming, and I do some online gaming and live streaming and stuff like that. Yeah. So,
this is a huge problem in this country. There was a broadband, FCC had a broadband plan that was designed really to get high-speed internet into rural areas. I don't know what the status of that is under the new chairman of the FCC, Ajit Pai. He does not seem to be particularly oriented towards supporting people. He seems more interested in making sure the big companies who provide internet in this country are taken care of to our detriment. What choices do you have? Do you have a phone company? There's no cable out there.
There's no cable, no. There's no Frontier. So essentially there's Dish Internet, which I hate because of the latency.
It's terrible, and it's very expensive, and you have to buy equipment, and there's bandwidth limits. Totally. Yeah.
Yep.
All of which I understand. It's because this is the natural limit of satellite, you know?
Right. No, absolutely. There's no way to fix it because it's...
Well,
to go to space
there is a very good satellite internet provider called WildBlue. That is, Exceed is the product, EXEDE. That is, I still think satellite has its limitations, particularly latency limitations, but this is the best of the breed. If that's your only choice, if it's that or, dial up, I would look at wildblue.com.
Right. Well, I do have two other options here, but I'm not comparing apples to apples because of how they word their product.
That's right.
And here's the thing.
Hang on. I have to take a break. Hang on. I have to take a break. So I do want to hear you out. So just hang on for a second because we have to stop for a moment. But we'll be right back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I used up your precious time with my inveighing against the Federal Communications Commission.
Quite all right.
What? Another Australian? This is not possible. Are you from Australia, Ben? Sydney, Perth, Brisbane, and then we had another Sydney family here moments ago. What is going on? I'm sorry. I apologize. I had to put you on hold. But go ahead. So tell me again, Lucas. What are your choices now in the country?
In the country, what I have a choice of is I have a choice of a wireless line-of-sight broadband service.
That'll be microwave, and that might be pretty good. What else do you have?
And then the other thing is it's basically an unlimited Verizon 4G LTE plan for what I would use it for.
That's going to be more expensive than the MDMA, probably, right?
Yes and no. I mean, depending on how we use it, the only problem I have with the with one of these is that the broadband gives us a minimum. So they're like, okay, we guarantee you 1 megabyte per second.
So that's what you'll get.
But the other one says, oh, well, we average this amount on the download, which is 14 or 15.
LTE is pretty good. LTE, it depends, of course, on what kind of signal you have where you're going to be, and I would certainly
it'll be great with Verizon. They said that's like the one carrier that gets really good service.
So if you get good service, Verizon's very fast. If you can afford it, and the bandwidth caps don't kill you, that would probably be the best way to do it.
Well, there is. They do have an unlimited plan, but there's one caveat to that, that I don't know so much about here. We do a lot of video streaming, like
yeah.
a ton.
Yeah.
And so we.
So that's you're going to go over a terabyte a year, a month rather.
Totally. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. But if we stream it directly video on our phones, it's unlimited. So I don't know. I've heard.
No. They'll know. They'll know if you're using it as a hotspot.
No, I know, but if I
could Chromecast it or AirPlay it to the TV.
No, if I Lightning adapter HDMI output from my phone to the television.
Yeah,
I don't know
do
if
that.
Netflix will play on those.
Yeah, you're gonna. Yeah, if yeah, they may shape you. They may. There may be also Verizon's notoriously nasty on this kind of stuff.
Really?
Okay. Are you sure it's unlimited? Because somebody's saying unlimited stops at 15 gigabytes on the Jetpack.
If you're using it as a hotspot, yes. But if you're just using the data on your mobile device,
yeah, but
tell me they won't throttle me.
Yeah, but there may be ways and ways of them knowing what you're up to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not. Verizon is going to be very strongly incented to keep you from using it that way.
Of course, naturally, yeah.
So I think you will get throttled. I mean, it's hard to know ahead of time. And then the wireless internet service provider, that can be quite good. It just really depends. The reason they will tell you minimum is because they, if there's trees in the way, that is literally a line of sight microwave link.
Right.
And that can be quite fast. The problem with most of these WISPs is you're sharing their connection to the internet. So if they have a lot of customers and they're, you know, too many customers for their connection, they'll slow down. And especially when you're watching Netflix at night and everybody else in the neighborhood is, they will slow down. So really,
right.
Both of these are not good.
No. And I mean, and I don't think 1 megabyte per second upload or download speed is enough to watch a video.
No, it'll be SD at best. It will not look good.
No, yeah, that's what I'm afraid of. So there's really no good option. I got to give up.
You're moving to the country, boy. And yeah, use this as an option, an opportunity to disconnect.
Which I did, by the way. I got off of Facebook and Instagram like your previous segment, like without even saying goodbye. I just deleted them.
Hold on a second. I'm going to come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking with Lucas. Poor Lucas. He's living in Santa Barbara, beautiful Santa Barbara, but he's decided to move. Where are you moving? That's so remote.
It's just north Santa Barbara. So
north,
it's kind of
north
like,
Santa yeah, Barbara. Yeah.
Yeah.
So your choices are a wireless internet service provider that'll do a microwave link, so it's line of sight, and using Verizon, which, you know, even in a rural area, sometimes Verizon, if you're close to a tower, will have very good connectivity. The problem, of course, Verizon does offer a Jetpack, which is designed for home internet access, but it's very much limited in terms of the overall bandwidth you can use. They say unlimited, but really, read the fine print.
Will do.
Because unlimited, see, the phone company defines unlimited as, well, we'll never stop your internet, but that doesn't mean it won't be throttled. Interestingly, the courts see it more like humans do, but what do you mean? If you're throttling it, that's limited. What you want to find out is when the throttling begins. Throttling means they slow you down. And once you're slowed down, you're not going to be able to watch your Netflix. The problem with a wireless internet service provider, this is very specific to whoever you're getting. These guys tend to be smaller. The real issue is what's their backhaul to the outside world? If they have themselves, let's say a 10 megabit connection, which would not be untypical, and they have 500 customers, right about 7 p.m. when everybody turns on Netflix, it's going to go down to nothing because it's shared
right.
It's shared bandwidth. So this is the real curse of anybody, you know, when you move out to the country, you get a lot of benefits, but you also may be giving up good internet. It's a shame because, you know, the internet started here, and But it's often the case, you know, so did cell phone networks, right? It's often the case that because we have a lot of infrastructure and a lot of history, that we don't have the best. The countries where they built it later might actually have better systems.
Wow.
So I think that's the case here. We've really got some problems. If what you want is streaming video, it's going to be hard for you to get. That may be where you want to go look at Wild Blue or something like that.
Quick question about that. How will that affect internet gaming where you're doing live gaming?
Terrible. But all of these solutions are going to be highly latent. Latency kills gaming. Latency is the delay between the time you shoot somebody and the time he gets shot, to put it bluntly, in a game like Call of Duty. And the problem with playing a game like that when you're playing on latent networks is the guy's going to move before you even know he moved. So it really is it's unplayable, frankly.
Right.
And it will not be your microwave link, your LTE, and satellite. All three were going to be very high latency connections.
All right.
Well, oh man, I'm sorry.
But it's the truth.
Is it too late to sell that house and move back?
Oh no, it's not. But it's
I was saying, here's your opportunity to disconnect from the internet. You said you did that once before.
Oh no! I just said goodbye to Facebook and Instagram without
good
even
man.
A goodbye. Just
like, you know what? I woke up this morning at 3 a.m. and found myself on Facebook on my phone, and I was so angry at myself I deleted Facebook and Instagram and Twitter from my phone.
Probably a good idea.
I think so.
You still check it on your computer.
It felt like there was a little bit of sense of relief. I didn't kill my accounts because I kind of need them for the job and all that. But there was a sense of lifting, of lightness, of freedom.
Absolutely.
Yeah, unfortunately, that means I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to have to look at the weather forecast at 3 a.m. I'm not going to have any.
That's what Netflix is for.
Netflix. So I better delete that. Hey, it's nice to talk to you, Lucas. At least you're moving somewhere beautiful, it sounds like.
Thanks, Leo. I appreciate you taking my call.
Yeah. We're stuck in this country. I mean, if you're in the city, you usually have cable internet. And the phone company will offer, you know, over your phone lines, a variety of DSL services. If you're really lucky, in some very limited areas, you may have a third choice, a fiber connection. That's the best. But that's very limited, and very few places can get that. We don't have what we need, which is a competitive marketplace. That's the real problem. And unfortunately, the new FCC commissioner doesn't believe in a competitive marketplace. He believes that the companies, you know, maybe with some merit, the companies who spent all that money laying cable in and laying fiber in, putting phone lines up, those are the companies that should get rewarded and should maintain a monopoly, or at best a duopoly. And so that's why 86% of all Americans have two choices for internet service, the cable company and the phone company. Two choices does not competitive make. And it's why we have, we rank very poorly in the quality and the price of our internet, even though it was invented here. It's one of the reasons why it's important, I think, to call your Congress critter and say we want to preserve net neutrality and we want to keep the FCC's broadband plan in place so that they continue to make it possible for, you know, it might take government investment, frankly, to get. See, the problem is that no company wants to invest in providing internet where the population density is, you know, a few people per square mile. It's too low in rural areas. There's just not enough money to be made. They build out the cities, of course, because there's plenty of money to be made there. There's lots of density. But they're not going to ditch cable out where there's, you know, one person every 400 feet. It doesn't pay. That's why it might take government investment to do this. I want to encourage the FCC to do that, I think. Michael, Daytona Beach, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Michael.
Hey, hello, Leo. I have a couple questions. One has to do with Google Home. And they sell the Google Home the speaker system, like the Echo.
The little thing.
But you can download Google Home on your phone and control Google Home to your phone. Why would you?
Well, this is how all of those guys work. You need the hardware,
because inside that hardware are specialized microphones that can hear you clearly across the room, even if there's other noise, and the hardware that connects to the internet and contacts Google and gets the interpretation of what you said. But you control that, and you, same thing with the Amazon Echo, with software on your phone. That's how you set it up, how you tell it what the Wi-Fi is, how you enable certain skills, how you give it your, for instance, on the Google Home, you can place phone calls, but the way you tell it what the phone number is through your phone. So they all do require a smartphone interface. If not a smartphone, you could do it on a tablet, or I don't think they have computer. Amazon does. Amazon, you can control from the Amazon.com website. I don't know if Google lets you control a Google Home from the website. I think you have to have an app. There's no interface on that thing. It's just got lights and buttons.
So the Google Home on your phone, the app Google Home on your phone.
That's just it's just for controlling. But I got to tell you, the Google Assistant, which any late model Android phone, I think it has to have Android 6 or later, has Google Assistant. That's the same thing as in that thing. You just talk to your phone and the phone responds. You don't have a device in your home. What's interesting about the Echo, the Google Home, and other devices that will be coming is that it kind of voice enables your home. You're not aware of this thing. You're not talking to the thing. You're just shouting at your house. And then it does something. And I think that's what's interesting about it. But we have these capabilities we always have on our phones, whether it's Siri or OK Google, all that. That's basically the same capability. It's just on a phone. Our Tech Guy podcast today brought to you by Fracture. Love the Fracture. I've showed you Fracture before. It's a photo decor company that is out to rescue your favorite images from the digital ether. I know we all have pictures of kids, of weddings, of vacations that we want to preserve, that we want to show off. But when it's on your phone or on your computer, you don't ever get to see it. Lisa and I have this policy. If we really like a picture, we'll put it up on the wall. And lately we've been doing these Fracture images that are amazing. You can upload straight from Facebook or Instagram. The sizes range from little to 20. Give me the big one. Yeah, this is a 21 inches by 28 inches. So this was an image I took on our last vacation that I loved, right? And I don't just want to have this on my phone. I want to have this on the wall. So we printed it on glass. Look at that. We printed it on glass. And now, I mean, I hang that in my office. That is just gorgeous. There's something about printing it on glass, the Fracture process. It makes the color and the contrast of the photo pop. And what's nice is these are frameless. They actually come ready to hang. See, you got a little hanger on there. And they come with the tools you need, the screw you need to hang it up. And it really brings a special memory to life. Here's one Lisa made of me. I do not print pictures of myself, but Lisa did. This is an example of the little one, and this is how they come. So it comes mounted in here. See, it's got the screw, and then you just lift it out of the that's to protect it on the shipping, and that's what it looks like. No border. You can have a border if you want. We put borders in some of ours, and then it's just ready to hang. And that's the little one. That's the 4.8 by 6.4. Here's kind of a middle-sized one. This was a picture I really loved of the train to Machu Picchu. So again, you just pop it out of here. You get a 60-day happiness guarantee. You're sure to love your order. If they didn't print it right or you don't like how it looks, they'll make it right there. Handmade in Gainesville, Florida, with U.S. sourced materials. They do a lot of recycling. Carbon neutral factory, so you really feel good about it. We're really fans of Fracture. I really love all the Fracture stuff. You have an advanced editor, so do we have any black and white? Yeah. So I took this picture. This is a picture of my kids, and I made it black and white. And then I put a black border around it just because that makes it pop. Let me take it out of the mounting thing. So that you hang that on the wall. Man, that's gorgeous. That's a great gift, too, for grandparents, family members. Fracture.me is the website. Fracture.me. And if you use our offer code TECH15, you'll get 15% off your first order, however much you order. So get all your favorite pictures together, upload them, and
print them on glass. I have to talk to them about the name. but they, I have to say, we ordered a ton of stuff, and it all came perfectly. Here's another black and white. I like to print my son's pictures in black and white. This was his graduation dinner. I felt like this looked like Frank Sinatra in the Rat Pack, so I had to print that one in black and white. Fracture.me, use the code TECH15, and you get 15% off your first order. They come beautifully. Hang them on the wall. Now your memories, you know, have a new life. You see them, and you go, wow. Those people are particularly attractive. Fracture.me. Use the offer code TECH15 at checkout. We thank Fracture so much, not only for their support, but for decorating our house so nicely. Hey, there's my buddy, Dick DiBartolo, Mad's maddest writer. We call him the Gizwiz, joins us each and every week. I saw a great picture. Was that a New York Comic Con?
Comic-Con, New York, yes, our final, you know, Mad's moving, so it was our final Comic-Con.
And man, how many Mad writers were there? It looked like the whole gang of idiots.
Yeah, you know, they flew, DC Comics flew in all the heavy hitters. I think there were 22 of us all together.
Oh, it was amazing.
And then there was a great party last night at a brewery, so that was fun.
So new editor-in-chief, the headquarters are moving from Madison Avenue, where they've been for so long, to Los Angeles.
Exactly.
But you're going to continue to write for them and yes, be in every issue. I'm glad to see it. By the way, I was looking at this picture. I was really looking at this picture at the Comic-Con of 22 all the great Mad writers. And then I noticed in the front row, one of the audience members had a strangely familiar silhouette.
Yeah, blocking almost. I think he was standing to try and block me out, but he failed because he's so short.
Alfred E. Newman in the front row.
Yeah, very rarely comes to events, but he thought this was worth it.
That is a great picture. I just love that picture. And yeah, there's Dickie D right behind Alfred's head.
Yeah,
you're lucky. His ears could block you entirely.
It's true.
Yeah. So Dick joins us each and every week for good reason. He likes to bring a gadget along. He turns out to be this kind of gizmo fanatic.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is another gadget I found at Interbike. And when the guy said, I said, you know, I got this press release about a bicycle seat that's also a lock. And he said, oh, yeah, it's right over here. So I go over, and it looks like a seat on a bike. And I said, well, where's the lock? And he said, well, you take the seat off, which he does.
Yeah.
And then under the seat, there are these hardened steel links that unfold. And then you unlock the end of it, and it's 3 feet of links. And then you put it through the bike frame and around a solid object. And then you don't have to worry about anybody stealing the seat because the seat is
I'll never forget walking down the streets in New York City and seeing all these bikes with their front wheel and their seat missing. They couldn't get the bike, so they just stole the seat. So this is what you need.
Well, a lot of people take the seat up to their take the wheel up to their office.
Oh, that's why the front wheel's missing.
That's why the front wheel.
But you could lock your front wheel in on this with this.
Yes, exactly. So you can use the seat and
this
connected chain. It's $99. They make they call it a Trekkie version, which is the slimmest seat that people who really like to go bike riding.
No, that hurts my behind.
Exactly.
Do they have a fat version?
Yes, they do. They have the comfort seat.
That's what I need.
Right.
Comfort seat. Yep.
And he was stuck for a word. I said, and the comfort seat is for, he said, well, it makes it comfier. I said, oh, okay.
Oh, that's what I want.
I'll
take two.
You have extra comfier?
One for each side. It'll be perfect.
Exactly. Cheek to cheek biking.
It's a bicycle bit for two.
Yes.
So to speak.
That's right. Yes.
This looks, and it's not expensive. I mean, if you bought a kryptonite lock, which is similar to, at least that much. Yeah.
The heavy duty kryptonite locks are, I think, are 120 or 140.
There you go.
It's convenient because you don't have to worry about a place to keep the lock when you're out driving.
It does, by the way, it explains why I keep seeing all these people on escalators with a single bicycle wheel under their arm. Now I understand why, when I go to New York, people get in the elevator and they're holding a bicycle wheel. I just never understood.
Yeah, that's it. That way you can leave the seat.
Yeah, yeah.
No one's going to, you know, unless you buy one of those wheels that we had last week and run around town and stick that on bikes and then electric drive it away.
I love that.
Yeah, it's a clever idea. Yeah.
If you want to know more about this product or anything that Dick mentions, not just on this show, but he makes regular appearances on World News Now, our Screensaver show, many other shows, go to his website, gizwiz.biz. And for the tech guy, just click that button that says the Gizwiz Visit the Tech Guy, and you can learn more about the seat, get the links you need to the CT Lock. Is that really its name?
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
Not a good name.
I thought Seat and Lock would have been better.
CD
but,
Lock.
Yeah, CD Lock.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's Sweaty Lock, but that's not.
Yeah. I called it that by accident.
Yeah, the Sweaty
show.
Lock. Yeah. While you're there, play the What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. What, Dick?
I was just going to say, if anybody's in town tomorrow, there's a meetup at the marina.
Oh, and you're doing your annual GizWiz meetup.
And all the info is at the same website you were just talking about.
So if you're a fan of Dick DiBartolo, I grew up reading Dick DiBartolo. Mad Magazine was formative in my life, as it was, I know, in very many people's lives. And you want to say hi to Dick and thank him for all this good work. Go to gizwiz.biz and find out about the meetup. They do that every year, and it's always a great fun. No charge. It's outdoors at the
exactly.
cafe there by the marina.
Yes, and Chad Johnson will join us.
Oh, nice. It's in the Upper West Side of Manhattan.
Yes.
Yes.
Bike on over.
Bike on. If you're in New Jersey, just bike on over. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. I'll see you next week.
Wiz.biz. Thank you. Think I can get, I wonder if I can get one more call in. People are so patient. Justin in Los Angeles. Let's see if we can wrap things up with you. Hi, Justin.
Hey. Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. What can I do for you?
So I have been using a 2011 iMac, and it finally died. So I just got myself the, 5K, big old 27-inch.
Nice.
Brand new iMac.
I think those 5K iMacs are gorgeous.
I drool when I look at them.
Really beautiful.
And so I do like a lot. I'm a filmmaker in Los Angeles. He actually helped me get a film out years ago.
Oh, neat.
Get a website set up. So thank you.
Oh, neat. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so in any case, I've got this new box sitting on my desk. And I want to migrate my information over. However, I only want to do a little bit. This old iMac has collected,
Yeah, and that's I agree with you. That's not a bad idea. There is a migration tool built in the Macintosh. In fact, when you first, I'm sure you noticed it, first started up your new iMac, it said, are you going to move stuff over from an old Mac? But I don't blame you for saying not all of it.
Right,
not all of it.
So I was wondering what the path might be. Primarily, it's the applications that I've paid for. But other than that, it's everything else I could just pull off a hard drive if I needed it.
Apps can be tricky. And in fact, the Apple migration tool, does it move apps? I guess it does move apps over. Apps can be tricky only because it's a little easier on a Mac than on, say, a Windows machine, because there usually is a single, what looks like a single file for the application, like Adobe Photoshop. Let's say you're probably moving Adobe Premiere, let's say. So you drag the entire Adobe folder over, but you'll also want to look in the system library folders and bring along any settings and that kind of thing. So those are hidden normally. Press the Option key, and then under the Finder, look at the Go menu. And if you press the Option key, you'll suddenly see Go to Library. Oh, and you'll be able to browse that folder. There are two library folders. There's a system level one at the top level and one in your directory. Make sure you get all those files, too. Those are the ones that have all your settings. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today, and of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.